Now, the only independent news talk network in the Middle East, Israel National Radio and IsraelNationalRadio.com present The Tamar Yonah Show. Here's Tamar Yonah.
And they came for your guns, but don't worry, they'll protect you. Welcome, everybody, to the show this Tuesday morning, June 27th, 2006, or the 1st of Tammuz, 5766, on the Hebrew calendar. Happy Rosh Chodesh, everybody. Happy New Month here from Israel National Radio, broadcasting out of Bet El, the House of God, just north of Jerusalem, D.C. That's right, Jerusalem, D.C., Jerusalem, David's capital, King David's capital. Everybody, welcome to the show. I'd like to say hello to all of our listeners down in southern Florida as well. The Tamar Yonah Show is syndicated on www.kolhalev.com. And I'd like you all, if you're listening to the show live, to join us in our virtual studio, which is a chat room where you can listen to the show live with people from all over the world. Right now, we have people in here from, let's see, from Florida and Georgia and Ohio and New York and Los Angeles and the Netherlands and Europe, from Adelaide, Australia, from Florida, Virginia, Idaho, Montana, Ohio, San Fernando Valley, Montreal, New Jersey, Arizona, New Jersey, PA, what's PA? I hope it's not the Palestinian Authority. I hope it is the Palestinian Authority. Pennsylvania, Utah, Alabama, Idaho, Australia, Southeast Asia, we have in Taiwan listening to us here at Israel National Radio, Baltimore, Winnipeg, Portland, Oregon, Calgary, Sweden, Stanford, Connecticut, Washington, Milwaukee, and Birmingham. What is this? Binghamton, New York. All right, everybody, welcome to the show. If you're listening to the show live between 7 and 8 a.m. Holy Time right here in Israel, or if it's between midnight and 1 a.m. New York Eastern Time, or 9 to 10 p.m. California Pacific Time, that means the show is broadcasting live, and you can join us in our virtual studio. You can call into the show if you have any comments or questions. Our virtual studio is accessible through our webpage at IsraelNationalRadio.com. Go to the upper left-hand corner of the page where you'll see a blue rectangle that says Enter Virtual Studio. Click there and follow the instructions. As well, you can call us our toll-free numbers from the USA, Canada, and Israel. 1-800-270-4288. From England and other places and around the world, you can go to our webpage and get our numbers from there. All right, the topic of today's show, and they came for your guns, but don't worry, they'll protect you. The disarming of civilians directly promotes genocide. We're going to find out more about that when we have our guest on. Let me just read you a bit here. Disarmed people are neither free nor safe, so don't believe it when they say they're going to protect you and you'll be better off handing in your guns. Civilians who are not protected, who don't own any firearms, become a criminal's prey and are tyrants' playthings. When the civilians are defenseless and their government goes bad, however, thousands and millions of innocents die. What disarms the citizens? The idea of gun control. It's the idea that only the government has the right to possess firearms and that citizens have no unalienable right to use force to defend against aggression set upon them. Since the mid-1990s, some sources have stated that the United Nations, the UN, is trying to disarm the world by taking control of all guns, including, in particular, guns held by private citizens in the United States. They use cosmetic terms like disarmament, peacekeeping, partners for peace, etc., in order to disarm countries and people. Is it reasonable to expect big or global government to protect us? Is the Second Amendment from America really passé? Can we now trust others to get to the scene of a crime in order to protect us in time? Or can we ask the attacker, can you wait while I use the phone to call the police? These questions are all going to be answered tonight as I interview Aaron Zellman from Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership. You can go to his website. I encourage you all to do that. www.jp.com. F like in Friday. Oh, jpfo.org. jpfo.org. Welcome to the show, Aaron Zellman.
Hello there. How are you?
I'm just dandy. It's a beautiful morning here in Israel. I'm worried about efforts by the UN, statements coming out of the UN, gun control people who are saying that guns are bad, it's evil, you know, the government can protect us, and trying to take away the Second Amendment in America. Can you tell us about what your organization does?
Well, JPFO is an educational organization. Our focus is to destroy gun control because we don't believe that gun control schemes belong in a civilized society. Our other focus is to promote all the Bill of Rights for all citizens. We look upon the Second Amendment as the guardian of all of the rest of our rights. If you choose to think about it, can you name a single dictatorship, a dictatorship that allows its citizens to be armed? And that, in a nutshell, is what the message that JPFO tries to get people to think about. Is that if you can't defend yourself, then you probably will be a slave.
Well, let's just go through a couple right here. Hitler, he was a dictator. Did he let his population hold arms?
If you were a loyal member of the Nazi Party, yes.
So the elite did, but the average citizen was not able to?
That's kind of an interesting story. In 1928, the Weimar Republic passed a gun registration program. Where everybody had to register their guns, and when the Nazis came to power about 5 years later, they did not have to bring gun control. It was already there waiting for them. And so they were able to go to those people who had their guns on the books and say, you know what, we don't want you to have guns anymore, hand them over. Don't hand them over, we'll kill you. And so when all was said and done, those who were considered to be not friendly to the party, or those who were Jews, were not allowed to own firearms.
Mm-hmm. And let's go to, so we know what
happened.
And by
happened. The way, yeah. There's a point I want to make. You know, we all know the number, about 6 million Jews perished in the death camps. Well, the total number of people who perished in the death camps was over 13 million. So there were a lot of people who were not Jews who were murdered by the Nazis.
Well, you know, gypsies, homosexuals, who else?
Well, it was anybody.
Political
that,
prisoners.
Well, if you didn't agree with the party, yeah.
Right. Okay, let's try another a nation. I know Stalin in Russia.
Well, Stalin's another example, especially in the Ukraine, where people were not allowed to own firearms. But again, it all starts with, if you look at all of the major genocides tomorrow, they all have one thing in common. The firearms are registered, the firearms are confiscated, the government decides to target a certain group for extermination, and then the genocide happens.
Hmm.
So with Stalin, he went after the people in the Ukraine primarily because he wanted their wheat. He wanted their land. So the firearms were confiscated, and then he just starved people to death for the most part.
What about the Khmer Rouge, Southeast Asia over there? There was a lot of atrocities that went on, genocides of people, intellectuals. Was there gun control put upon the people before that happened?
Oh, absolutely. In other words, it's the same formula. You know, I don't mean to sound, cute about this, but it seems like all these dictators go to the same school. They all learn the same techniques. And so all of the major genocides have this one thing in common, that the governments to protect people would always want to register guns so the criminals would not get their hands on guns. That's usually the old story. And then when the governments go bad, they decide to confiscate guns because they fear those people who might oppose them.
Hmm.
The Khmer Rouge were very brutal. They wanted to bring about a change. What they wanted was communism overnight. They wanted to make some major changes in the country instead of two steps forward and one step back, which is typical of communism. And they targeted anybody who they thought was smart. In fact, if you wore eyeglasses, you would be killed.
Where?
in Cambodia.
Really? Because you were considered to be
intellectual? In fact, that's something that we have a documentary film called Innocence Betrayed, and we point that out.
All right, Innocence Betrayed is a DVD movie that you've put out?
It's a documentary film that deals with the history of the major genocides. And it clearly shows the connection between gun control and death by government.
Mm-hmm. All right, and let me just tell people, if you want to get a hold of this DVD, you can go to jpfo.org, jpfo.org. You have something on your website I was looking at that had a whole chart showing direct connections between gun control, where guns were confiscated from its citizens, and then a genocide soon after following. Do you know where that is on your website if somebody goes to jpfo.org?
I'll have to look during the break, but
okay.
If you go to, when they go to Innocence Betrayed, I think that'll lead them right to the chart.
Right to the chart?
We have a trailer there, and people can watch the trailer, but I think it'll also take them directly to the chart.
Uh-huh. Okay, fine. So we'll look for that afterwards, and after the break we'll get that to you. All right. So we've gone Australia. Australia has gun control. They've taken the guns from people. I don't remember a genocide happening there.
Well, it's too early. What's happened in Australia and in England is that there's been a rampant increase in crime, and because people can no longer defend themselves. And so, at some point, all you need is for a government to go bad, to target people who the government doesn't like or who they fear, and, that's when the killing starts.
So rape and murders have gone up in Australia?
Yes, they have, and also in England, where they have intensive gun control scheme.
Mm-hmm. We have actually somebody from...
In fact, there's a famous story out of England. There's a farmer who... I can't remember his last name was Martin or Williams, but he used a shotgun in self-defense against criminals.
Mm-hmm.
The criminals got off, but he went to prison.
Why is that?
This is how bizarre the gun control schemes can be.
Well, why is that? How did that happen?
Well, I think that there's a move afoot to make sure that people are defenseless and the government, the state, is in total control. Now, the simple way to understand government, by the way, and I think this will put a lot of things into perspective, is the government's attitude is if it's not under our control, it's out of control.
Hmm.
And so I think that this is important for people to understand. This is the way the government bureaucrats think. They can't control your life. They're not happy campers.
Let me ask you a question. I remember reading a book once years ago. I think it was called Women and Guns or something. I don't remember the name, but it was something about women and guns. And there was a story mm-hmm. of a woman had her car break down, and she had to pull to the side of the road, and somebody came by, and she flagged him down, and she asked him for help. And, to make a long story short, he grabs her. He takes her, she's wearing her purse because she didn't know she had to leave her car, maybe he would take her to a gas station. He grabs her, throws her into the trunk of his car, slams the trunk down, and he goes out and drives a long way where he can do whatever he wants to do with her, maybe even kill her. And when he opens up the trunk, she had her purse with her, and in her purse she had a gun, and when he opened up the trunk, she just blew him away. So here is a woman who was totally defenseless, but because she had a gun to protect herself in the great big world out there, she had her life saved. So I'm going to ask you a question. Whenever people think of people who have guns, a lot of them, from being politically correct, they think they're violent people, they're horrible people. Why does anybody need to keep a gun? So why do people who own guns and who fight for the right to keep their guns have such a bad rap on them? Why do they have such a bad deal on them?
I think it's perception. I think that those who the most violent and the most evil people in the world are those who take guns from others. It's not people who own guns. And those violent and evil people have been very successful in selling their agenda to make gun ownership to be something that is looked upon as not a good idea.
All right. So we have the UN. The UN has all sorts of organizations called Partners for Peace. They have their disarmament plans, and they say we're going to go into nations, and because there's a lot of fighting going on in the world between, you know, countries in Africa and all over, and we're going to disarm them because we don't want to see these wars and genocides take place, even though they are. In the Sudan, 400,000 people were just killed, and they're not doing too good of a job, the U.S. peacekeeping forces. They want to disarm, and they say, but in order to disarm a country, you have to give the country something in return, because no country in their right mind, perhaps except for maybe Israel, but no country in the world would voluntarily give up their guns to an outside person and not have anything to defend themselves. So we, the UN, will come in and promise them that you give us your guns and we're going to guarantee your safety and we're going to take care of you if anybody attacks you. Don't worry, we're here. But the UN has a horrible, a wretched track record. So, you know, what should countries do if they're faced with the UN pressuring them, putting their thumb on them to give up their guns and weapons?
I'm not sure I can answer that question in its entirety, but I think people need to understand that they have a God-given right to defend their life. They should not give that up for some state-granted privilege that can be revocable. People need to understand that when governments want to register your gun, that's the first step in tyranny. The people have to take control of their government. That's the only way you're going to be able to keep the UN out.
I'm going to ask
you. The UN is a criminal organization. It is run. If you look at the people who are in charge of the UN, they're some of the worst countries in the world when it comes to human rights. So anybody who has faith in the UN, as far as keeping the peace, quite frankly, it is clueless.
All right,
nothing from history.
I'm going to ask you more about registration of guns later. First, let me get on the show. We have an acquaintance of yours, Aaron. We have Howard Lynette. He's the author of the book Living with Terrorism. You can get that on Paladin Press, www.paladin-press.com. Howard Lynette is here in order to give us some information about gun laws here in Israel. Welcome to the show, Howard.
Good morning.
Good morning. All right, you're an expert on living with terrorism. You write for many magazines, articles about protection and guns and et cetera, et cetera. What's the state of owning guns here in Israel?
In order to own a gun in Israel, you need to apply for a permit from the government, and they're very strict means test that's applied to the possession of a firearm. It's very difficult to get through that process and be able to qualify that your request comes in one of the little niches that would allow you to get a firearm. And right now what's happening is we're in a period of transition. Hopefully for the better. Firearms licensing has always been controlled by the Ministry of the Interior in Israel. In January, a ministerial committee decided that responsibility for all firearms licensing, civilian and otherwise, should be transferred from the Ministry of Interior to the Ministry of Police. That law was in fact passed and was supposed to go into effect January 1st. However, because budget was not transferred, the police ministry refused to accept the responsibility, and the Ministry of the Interior kept promulgating regulations and further restricting the ownership of firearms.
Yet, Howard, almost every house in Israel, I should say at least Jewish house, has a gun in it, either a army issued gun for people who have kids in the army, or handguns. I know that in my area, in the Beit El area, and anywhere you are in Judea and Samaria, it's pretty easy to get a gun because of, you know, your need for it when you travel the road sometimes. But how is it for somebody in, let's say, Tel Aviv? Because I know that there's shooting ranges all over Israel. I see them being used. They're very popular. I myself was surprised when I heard from you before the show that it was so difficult for some people to get a gun, because for us it's so easy.
You were able to apply for a permit for sport. You were able to apply for a permit if you were a member of the Civil Guard, that's the police auxiliary. You were a regular uniform member, meaning you passed special courses. You were in a particular special unit, and you worked in uniform with all the authority of a police officer for a minimum of 8 hours every month, volunteer service. Now the laws are, if someone applies for a permit, your work with the police no longer qualifies you to obtain a permit. Nor, if you're a sports shooter, may you possess your handgun or your rifle at home. It now has to be held in a secure location by the club, and you are only allowed access to it on the firing line for practice or for competition. Otherwise, your club officials have to take responsibility for it.
But you're hoping that it's going to ease up now with this new transfer of responsibilities?
I'm waiting for the police ministry spokesman to return the faxes that I've sent, asking for confirmation that in the budget that was passed, close to 6 months late, the funds were transferred, and now the responsibility solely is in the Ministry of Police. I see that as potentially a good thing, because now licensing will be in the hands of professionals. The other thing that I want to point out is every single one of Israel's top cops for at least the last 10, 12 years has repeatedly called upon the licensed gun owners in the country to carry their weapons with them when terrorism is more rampant.
You have another 10 seconds.
Because the police want the help of the public. So hopefully that will take care of it. We'll have a professional approach rather than emotional approach.
All right. Well, let's hope so. All right. Well, thank you very much. Aaron, do you want to say something real quick before we go to our news break to Howard?
Well, it's good to hear from Howard again, and keep doing the good stuff, Howard.
All right.
Well, good morning to you, and keep up the good work on your end.
Thank you.
All right. Well, when we get back, we're going to be speaking more about coming to get your guns, what you can do, if it's the right thing, if it's the wrong thing. We welcome your comments, 1-800-270-4288. That's a free phone call from USA, Canada, and Israel, 1-800-270-4288. Again, if you want to get Howard Lynette's book, Living with Terrorism, go to www.paladin-press.com. We'll be right back.
Heard a Rush Limbaugh, heard Michael Moore, Toby Singer got more politics than both of them guys put together. Toby Singer is the most pro-Zionist, pro-Israel, anti-disengagement, pro-Jewish talk show host on the internet. You like Middle East, Toby Singer's got it. You like politics, Toby Singer's got it. Got Toby Singer? You can get Toby Singer live every Tuesday through Thursday right here on IsraelNationalRadio.com. Toby Singer, Toby Singer, Toby Singer.
The Toby Singer Show, live on IsraelNationalRadio.com.
Life in the exile getting you down? Tune in to IsraelNationalRadio.com. We'll bring your spirits up with heartening news from the heartland of Israel. Israel National Radio, because Israel is awesome.
Now, the only independent news talk network in the Middle East, Israel National Radio and IsraelNationalRadio.com present the Tamar Yonah Show. Here's Tamar Yonah.
All right, they're coming to get your guns. What are you going to do about it? Should they? Is it better that people are unarmed? Will it prevent crime? Will it prevent crimes of passion? A man arguing with his wife, if the gun is there, is it better that the gun's not there? Who do we trust? Do we trust big government to protect us, or do we say the Second Amendment is the one of the greatest laws in the American Constitution, and that we have to guard this and that no one has a right to take our guns away? How does that work out around the world? Has gun control being implemented in different countries caused or led to, I should say, genocides? I have that chart in front of me actually now. But we're speaking with Aaron Zellman. He's the head of JPFO, the Jewish Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, jpfo.org. Aaron Zellman, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
All right, Aaron, we have some phone calls already lined up here, but I want to ask you, you had mentioned before that you talked about registration of guns. Now, I know that in America, people have a right to own a gun, but you have to register for it, and they do a background check. Is that something bad?
Well, it isn't quite that specific. Depending upon what state you live in, you can of course buy a gun from somebody else who's not a dealer. It's a private sale, and that firearm is not registered.
And you don't have to register.
There's a movement in America to register guns because the government wants to know who owns guns, and the government's getting very nervous about so many people owning firearms in America. Remember, over 40 million people own firearms in this country, and they own more than one gun. Another point I want to make to you is that, you know, we talk about the Second Amendment, but even if the Second Amendment did not exist, from the JPFO perspective, you have a God-given right to defend your life, with or without the Second Amendment,
mm-hmm.
whether government approves or doesn't approve.
Well, let me ask you something. If people did not register their guns, wouldn't it be harder to be able to connect a crime? If somebody murdered someone, they can take the bullet, they know what kind of gun it came out of, and they can trace it to the owner. Isn't it better that that people can own a gun, but the police know who the gun belongs to?
No.
Why?
The best thing is for the government to know as little as possible about you, whether it be guns or whether it be your shoe size.
But in order to solve a murder, wouldn't it be better? No.
Well, you know that they have all the tracing ability, and studies have shown that this isn't necessarily a terrific way to solve a crime, because sometimes guns, the criminal intent is to borrow a gun from somebody, or they have a throwaway gun, or they steal a gun, so it really doesn't mean much.
Hmm. All right, let's go to a phone call. We have Jonathan from Kiryat Arba, right near the holy city of Hebron in Israel. Again, 1-800-270-4288 is the number to call in. Welcome to the show, Jonathan.
Hi, Tamar. Thank you.
Hi there.
Hi. So I wanted to mention that I myself am a gun owner for many years. And I'm someone who has a lot of experience with guns, and I've served in the military. And one thing I can tell you and all the listeners is that specifically Jews, as a historically persecuted minority throughout history, should know how important it is to possess firearms to protect ourselves, to not be victims, because you have situations occurring wherever Jews are unarmed and defenseless, being persecuted by anti-Semites, such as in France. In France today, I don't know if you're aware, Jews are being assaulted daily on the streets. They are being insulted. Synagogues are being burned. A young Jew was murdered several months ago, tortured and murdered by an anti-Semitic gang for being Jewish. And the Jews, are victims. It's almost like pre-war Germany. And this is not something that's only can happen in Europe. This can happen to Jews anywhere in the world, wherever they are, even in the land of Israel. In our land of Israel, we are under threat of Muslim terrorists every single day. And if Jews do not arm themselves to protect themselves against these things, we will just be victims again, like in the Holocaust. God forbid. And I think this is a lesson that people really have to internalize and have to make an effort, even though sometimes there are some unwillingness among Jews for whatever reason, cultural reasons. They feel it's maybe improper or goes against the Jewish tradition to possess weapons, to be violent. It's not an issue of violence. It's an issue of v'nishmatem od l'nashotechem, which in Hebrew means and you made an extra effort to protect yourself, to keep yourself healthy and safe.
Right.
And this is a commandment in our Torah. And I think that Jews really need to wake up and start possessing guns.
I know that in Kiryat Arba you probably are in need of a gun, and it's good to have it. Aaron, what would you like to say to Jonathan? Don't you have something on your website that talks about the Jewish approach, the Jewish philosophy, the Jewish opinion on self-defense, and is Judaism, according to what you know, for Jews holding guns, would that be in agreement with Judaism?
Well, in fact, your caller mentions the Torah, but also in the Talmud, Tractate Berachot, pages 58a and 62b, there's an injunction that says, and the Torah says, if someone comes to kill you, arise quickly and kill him. Doesn't talk about serving them coffee or negotiate.
So
if
you got to have
life is in danger, kill them.
So you got to have something to protect yourself with, and a bow and arrow may not do it.
Something more than a fry pan.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So, no, I agree with your caller wholeheartedly.
Jonathan from Kiryat Arba, thanks so much for your call. 1-800-270-4288. Aaron, how could it be? I mean, Americans are very into their freedoms. They're very proud people. The people who own guns are very proud gun owners. How would a scenario take place if the U.S. government decided to capitulate to the U.N. and start confiscating guns? How would it go over in the U.S.?
That's a good question. There are a lot of gun owners who, quite frankly, are apathetic. They're gun owners in the sense that they have shotguns to go trap shooting or they go hunting and they go shoot birds, things like that. The true gun owner is someone who considers himself to be a rifleman, who is capable of using a military-style rifle at 600 yards to keep the enemy away at 600 yards or so. There's not a whole lot of those folks in America. I think that most Americans have become so fat, dumb, and lazy that they might think that if the government offered them a free refrigerator, they might as well give up their guns, to be quite blunt about it.
Just after Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, when it wrecked devastation over there, U.S., I'm not sure if the National Guard or who exactly, went door-to-door collecting, or I should say confiscating, guns from American citizens. That's a time that one would need their guns, it seems to me, because people are homeless, people are wandering the streets, people are hungry, people might be breaking into your house if they know that you're there, if there's food. And yet the government went specifically to those people and confiscated their guns. What would you like to comment about that?
Well, think about what I said earlier. The attitude of government is, if it's not under our control, it's out of control. Government fears the citizens who can be self-reliant. And I don't care whether it's in America or someplace else. That's just the way governments are.
There's a video of one of these news channels that interviewed someone, and he was saying how they came to collect his guns and that they were a bit taken aback because he said, my guns were bigger than their guns. But he handed them over nonetheless. Could this take place? I mean, you're saying that if the government would just offer them a refrigerator or some type of chupar, as we say in Hebrew, some type of little prize for doing it, that a lot of Americans would do that. Here, at a time when people really need their guns, the government was successful in taking them, even from people who were minding their own business in their house, needing it for self-defense, and yet it went by all right.
You know the old expression, some people talk the talk but don't walk the walk?
Yes.
Well, I think that's very true of a lot of Americans. Yeah, they talk a lot, but the push come to shove, they're not going to walk. They're just going to roll over and say, here, take them.
Why does the U.N.?
That's what's happened to America in the last the last 50 years. The country has become soft, and it's become reliant on government. And you know, people are just too lazy to do for themselves, and they become apathetic. And, you know, so I'm very pessimistic about America being the land of the free and the home of the brave. Maybe for 5% of the gun owners in this country, that's true, but the other 95% really don't care. They really don't matter.
Let me read you some statistics here from your website, again, jpfo.org. It gives here dates, the governments, and the genocides they committed. All of these had gun control and gun confiscation before these genocides took place. Ottoman Turkey, the Armenians, mostly Christians, were killed. Between one and one and a half million civilians who were Armenian citizens of Turkey were killed by their own government. Because just beforehand they put a ban on possession of firearms and they made permits required, government list of owners, that's what they had. The Soviet Union between 1929 and 1945, 20 million civilians were killed. They also had a ban on gun possession. Nazi Germany and occupied Europe, same thing, 1933 to 1945, 20 million people murdered by these own governments, not by criminals, not by crooks, but by governments. China, between 1927 and 1949, with their political opponents, army conscripts, and others, 10 million people they killed. Again, the government put a ban on private gun ownership. And Red China and Guatemala, between 1960 and 1981, between 100 and 200,000 people were murdered by their government. Uganda, 300,000 people between 1971 and 1979. Cambodia, the Khmer Rouge, between 1975 and 1979, 4 years, 2 million people were murdered by the government of the Khmer Rouge. Rwanda in 1994, the Tutsi people, 800,000 of them slaughtered. They had gun control there as well. And we're looking now at the United Nations saying the same thing to America, that America is one of the last big countries that still permits their citizens to own firearms. And they're basically saying, when are you guys going to grow up and get in line with the rest of the world? So I'm going to ask you about that in just a moment. But first, let's take a caller. Again, we're running out of time. We only have another about 8 minutes left to the show. So if you want to call in, you have to do so now. 1-800-270-4288. We have joining us from New York, Ephraim. Ephraim, welcome to the show. What's your comment or question for Aaron Zellman?
Hi, Tamar. It's very interesting you mentioned Armenians. My background is from Iran, and I read in a history book very well documented some, like 85 years ago, there was an incident of some mullahs in a mosque started to say things against Armenians and against the Jews, which both shared this common denominator, which was they having alcohol, which is haram in Islam, meaning it's like not kosher. So they decided with the community in Tehran to attack the Jewish and Armenian homes and get rid of their wine vessels and anything with alcoholic beverages. On the day that they supposed to attack both the Armenian homes and the Jewish homes, they only attacked the Jewish homes because back then Armenians were armed. And they're afraid to break in into any Armenian homes.
Interesting.
As a result, only Jews got hurt, they got raped, and they got killed. That's my comment.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Thank you so much for your call, Ephraim. So again, we see here, Aaron, that if you don't have any type of protection at home, you're a victim. You're easy prey.
Absolutely.
Let me ask you about the UN. Why is the UN so interested what's going on in America? What do they care if American citizens inside America have a gun?
Well, I think that, you know, the UN has this globalist approach, and they want to control the world. There are people in many governments around the world who want to help the UN do that. But it isn't just the UN. I don't know how many people realize that there is an organization called the International Action Network on Small Arms, and they work with the UN. This is a network of more than 700 non-governmental groups working in 100 countries against the individual's right to bear arms. And so it's more, this problem is much more, it's deeper and it's much more severe and more sinister than just the UN. The UN is the cover for what's really going on underneath. What's going on underneath is really very, very dangerous. It's treacherous.
Hmm. All right, let's go to Oregon. We have Yonatan on the phone. Yonatan, welcome to the show. What's your comment or question for Aaron Zellman of the JPFO.org?
Greetings to Martin. Greetings, Mr. Zellman. I'm calling from Chillicum, Oregon, and I just want to let people know that when you own a gun, there's also a responsibility to be able to use the gun. Gun ownership isn't just about buying a gun and letting it sit in the closet to get
dusty
dust bunnies on and jam whenever you need it in an occasion where you have to use it. So whenever you own a gun, you should be able to use it in a responsible manner.
Yonatan, do you own a gun yourself?
I own many guns.
You own
and
many
I have
guns.
Used guns. And I've used guns in situations where my life was threatened.
What would you do, Yonatan, if the government said that there's a state of emergency and we have to collect guns because there's a gunfight going on and they've already shot 6 police officers, and so we're going and we're collecting all the guns in the area to make sure that we can control everything? What would you do? Hypothetically,
all,
I don't want to get you in trouble. Hypothetically, what would you do?
First of all, I don't have guns that have been registered. I have guns pre-1968, and they really don't know I own the guns, so if they told me they wanted to collect my guns, they'd say I don't have any.
Mm-hmm. And if they knew that you did, if a neighbor reported you, what would you do, hypothetically?
Hypothetically, I would say unless you have a warrant, you're not going to come in.
Mm-hmm. Well, what if they offered you a new refrigerator?
No. No, that's no trade at all. Protection is no trade. You can't sit inside a refrigerator and repel bullets.
So, Yonatan, you've decided that you're not going to be a victim, that you have protection for yourself in case you need it, God forbid.
Yes, and I have used it, yes.
All right. You have used
and
it?
And that's,
can you tell us about that, or would that get you in trouble?
No, I can tell you about that. I had an occasion where I served a person with a restraining order. And the person knew where I lived, and he came back on his motorcycle. He was a biker, and he was drunk and on drugs, and he rode up on my front lawn and tried to have it out with me on my front lawn. And I just pulled out my shotgun after he told me I knew he was a felon when I gave him the restraining order, but when he was looking down the barrel of my 12-gauge shotgun, he backed off real quick. And I had the phone in my other hand, and I called 911, and they came out, and they arrested him for trespassing.
It's a good thing you had your
gun
then.
He told the police officers, well, he chambered around whenever I came up to him. And I told the police officers, well, you can't kill anybody with an unloaded gun.
I hear. All right, well, thanks for sharing that story with us, Yonatan, and thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
All right, Aaron, we only have another, 3 minutes to the show. Is there anything that you want to tell people in order that they can better protect their rights to keep their guns if they own them, and if they want to go out and buy a gun because the world is getting more violent today, perhaps people need to responsibly hold one in their home to protect their family? How can the JPFO help, and whatever else you want to say?
Well, JPFO can help from the standpoint that we give people a lot of intellectual ammo to help them understand the reason to defend themselves. Very few people understand within America that the police have no legal obligation to answer your 911 call. Hmm. We have a little book called Dial 911 and Die, and it deals. It's written by an attorney and explains very clearly that the American citizens have no. There's no legal obligation on behalf of the police to answer the 911 call. So you really are on your own. You are your own first line of self-defense. And I would encourage people to look upon firearms as a life preserver. It's a tool that you use. It's a tool that you obtain. It's a tool that you have in case you need it. It's like an insurance policy. a whole lot better to have it and not use it than need it and not have it.
Mm-hmm.
I think people need to develop that kind of attitude.
Mm. All right. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. Again, if anybody wants to get hold of Aaron's DVD, the JPFO, the Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, they can go to your website, jpfo.org. And the name again of your DVD that shows exactly how important it is to have guns and to not let the government take it away from you?
It's called Innocence Betrayed.
Innocence Betrayed. You also have a book out called Death by Gun Control, The Human Cost of Victim Disarmament. That's written by you and Richard W. Stevens, attorney at law. And that can also be gotten through your website as well.
The book is really the basis for the documentary.
Mm-hmm.
But it gives people the information. It gives them examples of the laws in different countries and how they were applied. And it's the kind of knowledge that you're not going to get on the 6 o'clock news.
Right. Well, I saw your DVD, and I want to say it's a very powerful DVD. Anybody who wants to learn more about this, maybe show it to groups if you're in organizations or your synagogues, churches. The world is getting more violent. The weather is getting more violent. Natural disasters occur. You may, God forbid, need a gun to protect your family if you have anybody breaking into your home in situations like that. You're going to want to get his DVD. It's very, very powerful. I must warn you, extremely powerful. Graphic images there as well. But again, these are true films. These are real films, real things that have happened around the world, and why you have to be careful, why you have to be safe. Thanks again so much for being with us, Aaron Zellman from Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership.
My pleasure.
Thank you. All right, again, jpfo.org is the website to go to learn more about your rights and how you can protect them. And, you know, anybody wants to take away your Second Amendment, if you're in America, anybody around the world who wants to take away your gun, be aware. Find out why. There must be a reason why. There's some type of control going on over there. And remember, all of these countries that had gun control and had genocides by their own governments, not by outside governments, not by criminals, but by their own governments, slaughtering their own people. Thanks, everybody, for being with us here at Israel National Radio. I'm Tamar Yonah. And we'll be back tomorrow, God willing, with the Tovia Tamar Show. Everybody, please say a prayer for Gilad Ben Aviva, that he should be returned home safely and well.
I just want to say to all the listeners of Israel National Radio that I'm a big fan of Ari and Jeremy's show, A Light On to the Nations. It is an inspiration to me, and they are an inspiration to me. All the people out there, all the people listening to this show, all the people, all the Jews in the diaspora, may the light of God and the taste of freedom shine deep, deep into your hearts.
That's Ari and Jeremy with A Light On to the Nations, every Wednesday on IsraelNationalRadio.com.
Haredi. Oh.
Just turning on your radios.
The Bala Tosfos probably never saw an elephant.
Audio.
Haradio is a way to escape without leaving reality.
Jewish. Audio.
We produce clean, fun, and interesting audio.
Wow, now this is fantastic.
Haradio. www.haradio.com.